Hi, welcome to Journey of the Monkey King, a chapter-by-chapter discussion of Journey to the West. I am Quiva, and I'm joined by my friend MJ, as always.
What up?
So this chapter is going to contain animal death, human death, and also torture, so...
Woo!
I'll put a timestamp in the show notes, especially for that last one.
Cool.
Before we start into the chapter, there's one important piece of context before we continue.
Yay, I love context.
And that is that Tang, as in the Tang Dynasty, and Sugar are homophones in the language this is written in.
Sweet. Is this going to be like another diss track rap battle type thing that we need to be aware of?
No, it's just a pun. It's going to happen.
Also fun. Puns are good. A pun or play on words.
I figured I'd actually, you know, set the ground for that in advance rather than trying to explain it after the fact this time.
Sweet.
Yeah, Sugar.
Hey, you should be the comedian.
So we're moving on to chapter 14, and Tripitaka and Bo Quinn have just heard a voice shouting, "My master has come," from underneath the mountain of two frontiers.
I gotta say, that is some significant character. I don't know if I should say growth, because it does seem to have come from torture, so it's some significant character something from Sun Wukong.
We don't know who's talking. We don't know who said that.
Right. Okay, sorry. If it were, it would be some significant character development, because I do not think he would have called anyone master.
That's fair.
Although, you know, you don't know anything about people's proclivities.
So Bo Quinn tells Tripitaka a story you may not find surprising. It turns out the Mountain of the Two Frontiers used to be called the Mountain of the Five Phases, and back during the reign of Wang Mang, which is about 9 to 23 CE. I don't know why I said about. It's a historical record. It was 9 to 23 CE. The mountain fell from the sky and happened to trap a monkey god underneath.
That's some serious fucking revisionism right there. Just happened to trap this monkey god. Whoops!
I mean, well, how would they know that it was Buddha who did it?
I don't know, that kind of feels like it would... Yeah, I suppose most mortals don't have a direct line to the guy himself, so...
So they go to see the monkey trapped underneath the mountain. He's been stuck there so long that lichen is growing on him and wisteria is sprouting from his ears.
That's a look. Wisteria is very pretty.
He's a head of hair made from grass and a beard made from moss.
I'm liking this look.
Well, it's not there for long because Bo Quinn goes up to him and starts pulling away some of the growth and tries to talk to him. But he's only interested in talking to Tripitaka.
Okay, so still a little bit of that Sun Wukar in there.
So the great sage, equal to heaven, introduces himself as such and explains why he's trapped there and his new mission from Guanyin. He tells Tripitaka all he has to do to free him is to remove the magic tag stuck to the top of the mountain.
Magic tag.
Yeah, so Buddha wrote the word they use consistently is tag, but like a piece of cloth or paper or something with the prayer Om Mani Padme Hum written on it.
Ah, yes, I do remember this.
Yeah, so that's the piece of magic that's keeping Sun Wukong in place.
I don't know, just as a comedian, when I think tag, I always think mini punchline.
Is that, I'm not familiar with that terminology.
Yeah, like when you're telling a longer story, before you get to the big punchline, you'll put in like little bits or tags to keep the audience interested.
Yeah.
Rather than like if it's quite long, because you do want a certain level of silence, because if you're that kind of storytelling comic, you want a certain level of silence, because if it's like boom 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 some of the heavier lines might lose their weight, but you also don't want the audience to switch off and forget that you're at a comedy gig, or if you do a fucking ton of jokes about death and mental illness, for example, to pull that from the sky. You don't want them to, sometimes their empathy just switches on, the bastards, and you kind of have to go, no, I'm not in therapy here. Trying to make you laugh about cancer.
Yeah.
So
You're
that's
meant to
what
be
those
laughing
are.
at me. Stop being
Yeah,
nice.
laugh at my misery. This is what we're all here for. But yeah, so I'm just kind of like, what little mini punchline did Buddha put on? This is not important. I just had my first bit of stage time in over, I think nearly 6 months, like actual being on a stage thing, and I have. There's a rush that comes from it that you kind of build up a tolerance to when you're doing this shit, 3 to 4 times a week. But when you're not for a very long time, it's like I had a massive high and now I've got like sort of a vaguely floaty come down. So I'm just like, yeah, this may not be the most focused of episodes, but have been
Which one of
warned.
our episodes was the focused one so far?
You know what? Fair. Fair. I can't argue with it. I feel like I should, but I can't.
Anyway, Bo Quinn and Tripitaka hike to the peak and find the tag stuck to the top. Tripitaka bows down and prays, saying, "If the monkey was telling the truth, let me remove it easily. If he was only a monster trying to trick me, let me not lift up this tape."
Feel like with Sun Wukong, both of those things could be true at once.
That's fair. In any case, he does pull it off easily, and a gust of wind tears it out of his hand and carries it away westward back to Buddha.
Woo.
No littering in this novel.
Yay, I appreciate that. I feel like it's just the laziest crime. There's just no excuse for it.
So when they return to Monkey, he tells them they'd better stand back. No, further back than that. They walk about 3 kilometers away for safety, at which point they hear a voice shouting, "Further back!"
I like that. I like that a lot.
They go further, completely clear of the mountain, when suddenly the side of the mountain basically explodes, and the monkey is already standing next to them.
Whoa.
So
So
he.
he's still pretty powerful. I feel like I kind of forgot that while he was being tortured under a mountain and such. I kind of forgot that actually he's packing some serious heat. He is the party's tank.
Yeah, no, he's the party's everything.
Also, if a Journey to the West tabletop RPG doesn't already exist, I'll be very disappointed in
I'm sure
humanity.
there has to be one.
It's got to be, yeah.
Anyway, he declares, "Master, I'm out," and he bows 4 times, so he is trying to be respectful.
He's on his best behavior. I kind of feel like it just doesn't come naturally, and this is going to be a source of much amusement.
So he thanks Bo Quinn for escorting his master this far, and for shaving off the grass.
Sorry, I love the little hesitation there. Thank you for shaving off the grass. I like obviously my mind went to the filthiest possible place there.
that was just an effect of the fact that that was a new line coming off my notes, and I
Sure.
failed at reading for a second.
Sure.
But he starts going to work immediately, tying up the luggage to the horse. The horse is a bit terrified of him, though. Being the official stable master for Heaven, like, gives him a lingering authority over all horses, so they're all afraid of him.
Okay, fair.
This, I'm not sure if this ever comes up as an important detail again, but it's mentioned, and I think it's interesting, kind of world building on that.
Yeah, I like that. Sometimes you take a bullshit job and you don't realize what skills it's taught you till much later.
Yeah. So Tripitaka tries to give him a religious name, but Monkey tells him he's already called Sun Wukong, which Tripitaka remarks is very appropriate for the Chan Buddhism that he practices. Or Zen Buddhism is the name you're probably more familiar with. Zen is the Japanese pronunciation.
That I did not know.
So Tripitaka still decides to give him a nickname, and he calls him Pilgrim Son.
Aww.
And so he's called he's the novel like interchangeably uses all his different titles constantly, but Pilgrim is Pilgrim Son or just Pilgrim on its own is one of the most frequent ones from now on.
Nice.
So Bokwin sees Tripitaka as a new protector and heads home. Tripitaka thanks him and promises to stop by on his way back to thank him again.
To which Bo Quinn goes, you don't yeah, you don't have, don't go out of your way on my account. I'll see you at some point. This fucking picky eater chicken shit bastard who put him in danger. He was not a good house guest.
I mean he helped his dad get reincarnated.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, so he's not like quite the Hans Christian Andersen of Pilgrims. I just kind of feel like that whole experience was a lot, and I would look back on the memory with mostly fondly, but I probably would not want that man in my house again.
But no, they head on. They say goodbye to Bookwin, they head on. Pilgrim Son starts leading the way, naked except for the luggage on his back. After a while, they come across a tiger blocking the road. Tripitaka is frightened, obviously, but
He's had some experiences.
Monkey tells him, "Don't be afraid, master. He's only here to present me with some clothes."
Tiger Butler.
No,
No.
Monkey puts down the
Oh, oh
luggage.
no. Oh, I see. I see. Oh no.
So Monkey, puts the luggage down, he walks towards the tiger, pulls a needle out from behind his ear and transforms it into the iron rod, and he brings it down on the tiger and basically explodes its entire head.
Yeah, wow, okay. Tripitaka is just there covered in tiger brains with his mouth open going, what the fuck?
He literally falls off his horse in shock.
I love this. I love how there's this little slapstick element. Well, I suppose there's always been one, but I like seeing it back. I enjoy this.
And he remarks that, he thought it was impressive when Boquin spent like several hours fighting a tiger.
I feel like that's impressive in a different way.
Fair.
You know, I don't think I could spend several hours fighting anyone.
So, Monkey turns back to him and says, "Master, sit down for a while and wait till I've stripped him of his clothes." What clothes?" "Oh, don't mind me, Master. I have a plan." So yeah, he skins the tiger, and
Feel like this is, yeah, wow.
he skins the tiger and makes half of it into a loincloth, and half of it he packs away for later.
Tripitaka at this point is just kind of, yeah, I'm thinking about this little this little vegetarian monk kind of looking on going, oh my God.
Basically. When they head out on the road again, Tripitaka asks Wukong why didn't the tiger even attack him? And Wukong says, "To tell you the truth, even a dragon, let alone a tiger, would have behaved itself if it had seen me. I, old monkey, have the power to subdue dragons and tame tigers, and the power to overturn rivers and stir up oceans. I can look at a person's countenance and discern his character. I can listen merely to sounds and discern the truth. If I want to be big, I can fill the universe. If I want to be small, I can be smaller than a piece of hair. In sum, I have boundless ways of transformation and incalculable means of becoming visible or invisible. What's so strange then about me skinning a tiger? Wait till we come to some real difficulties. You'll see my talents then."
I feel like a lot of that was true, but
I love how unbelievably fucking sinister he is.
yeah, I don't know, because I like we're seeing it obviously with chapters upon chapters of context. I do not believe him to be the best judge of character. I kind of feel like the exaggerations there were unnecessary. You kind of, yeah, turn back rivers to fill yourself to the universe. You got a portable army, tigers, all the rest of it. Yeah. But judge a character, was that necessary? That, I don't know.
So they carry on anyway after that. That kind of ends the conversation.
It would, wouldn't it?
It's getting late when they finally come across a house and they decide to ask for lodging for the night. Wukong marches straight up to the door and shouts, "Open up!" And an old man opens the door and nearly has a heart attack when he sees Wukong, and he shouts, "Oh, it's a ghost!" Tripitaka tries to calm him down and tells him, "Don't be afraid, he's my disciple, not a ghost. I'm a poor monk from the Tang court on my way to seek scriptures from Buddha in the West. It's getting late and we beg you for a night's lodging." And the man replies, "You may be a Tang man, but that nasty creature is certainly no Tang man." Monkey bursts in, "Of course I'm no sugar man or honey man. I'm the great sage equal to heaven. You should recognize me, I've seen you before." "Where have you seen me before?" "You really don't recognize me? Take a closer look. I'm the great sage of the stone box in this mountain of the two frontiers." You do look somewhat like him, but how did you get out?" And after that, they share their stories and they're finally invited in. The sugar joke is very funny to me because, like I said, Tang and sugar are apparently homophones. But of course, Wukong doesn't have a clue what the Tang dynasty is. He's been locked up for the last 500 years. So to him, Tripitaka has been telling everyone he's a sugar monk from the Sugar Kingdom.
Does that have any sort of like slang meaning
I've no
at this
idea.
period of time? Because that would be even more hilarious.
No,
The sugar monkey.
the footnotes certainly don't go into anything else. It's just
I
a
will
pun.
fill in my own blanks.
Anyway, over tea, the old man and monkey reminisce a bit. The old man who shares Tripitaka's surname, Chen, thought that monkey looked a lot less scary when he was a child and he saw him locked up, covered in grass and moss. He looks a bit skinnier now, and with that tiger skin draped over him, he looks a bit like a demon. And this is taken casually, everyone laughs at it. Monkey does not kill anyone over this, thankfully.
Again, I'm, I ha again, I hesitate to say growth, but certainly development.
So eventually Monkey pipes up and he says he hasn't had a bath in 500 years. He'd rather appreciate it if they boiled some water for him in Tripitaka. Which, fair enough.
Yeah, definitely fair. I'm thinking of the slime that's under lichen now.
After the bath, he also has to borrow a needle and some thread, and he goes about sewing his loincloth into a proper tiger skin skirt. And
Stylish.
he tries on the white shirt that Tripitaka took off before going into the bath himself. He shows himself off to Tripitaka and he asks, "How does old Monkey look compared to yesterday?" "Very good. You look like a pilgrim now. If you don't think the shirt is too worn out, you can keep it." So he does.
Nice. Free shirt.
Next morning, they head off again, and they pass a few days on the road, and winter eventually starts to set in. So one day, they get stopped on the road by six men who demand they hand over their horse and belongings or they'll be killed. And Tripitaka is so terrified he falls off his horse again.
He's gonna do that a lot,
Yeah,
isn't
he is. I'm, I
he?
think we should keep a tally.
Yes! Okay, so how many times we got now? We got two?
We got two.
Wait, did he fall off his horse the first time he got, ambushed by monsters?
Oh, actually, I should go and double check that.
Because it might be three.
Yeah, we should go double check that. I think in the last time his horse actually just when they got attacked, his horse actually just sat down by itself and refused to get up again.
That's fair. I and as a socialist myself, strike action against unnecessarily difficult work conditions is something I am broadly in favor of.
But Monkey picks him up and he says, "Don't worry, Master. It's nothing, really. Just some people coming to give us clothes and some travel allowance."
Oh, no.
"Wukong, you must be a little hard of hearing. They told us to leave our bag and horse. You just stay here and watch our belongings and let Old Monkey confront them. We'll see what happens."
There's a real strong "you're locked in here with me" energy to that statement, isn't there?
So Monkey walks up to the six men and he salutes. They have a little chat and they introduce themselves as philanthropic mountain lords, is their euphemism. So
bandits,
yeah. They're called these are their names: the eye that sees and delights, the ear that hears and rages, the nose that smells and loves, the tongue that tastes and desires, the mind that perceives and covets, and the body that bears and suffers. So obviously odd names, context here again. The chapter title mentions the six robbers, which is obviously these guys, but also it's a term for the six sense bases, or...
Interesting. Yeah, and there's a lot of... that's it seems very allegorical.
Yeah, and the Buddhist term is ayatana. And so I think the idea here is roughly... they're actually like seen as a sort of a negative thing. Maybe negative is the wrong word, but the kind of the your senses cause distractions and desires that block your way to enlightenment.
It certainly seems like shit that can get you in trouble.
Yeah, so you need to like master and overcome them. And similarly, Wukong is called in the chapter title and some other poems in the book Mind Monkey, which is like also a Buddhist term for... I'm not read up on these much, you know. I read the footnotes here, skimmed Wikipedia, had tried to Google other things, not very good at researching this kind of thing. But I think it's kind of like a Buddhist term for a kind of like the untamed kind of wild mind, part of your mind. It's paired with another idea, which is it's mind monkey and will horse.
Okay.
I don't know, reading on it kind of vaguely makes me think of id and ego, although I don't think that really maps exactly because there's no like super ego in this.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, the thing that immediately came into my mind was like monkey on your back, like addiction. But it is quite interesting because obviously this is shit that lets your impulses run awry and kind of stops you thinking of the consequences of your actions. And it's very interesting to me that the guy who got kicked out of heaven for being drunk and disorderly, it's the guy who's fighting these right now. Well, I mean, there were many, many other reasons. Firstly, he was drunk on other people's shit. He was now quadruple immortal, and he totally... No one should ever go to the Feast of the Immortal Peaches.
No, no.
Don't go. Politely decline that invitation. Have a dentist appointment that day.
But yeah, it is interesting because, like you're saying, this is kind of something that you need to overcome for enlightenment, and it's Wukong who's doing it, even though he's also, in this metaphor, kind of a wild force himself. But I'm absolutely not qualified to dissect these metaphors.
It's quite cool, actually, and it's very sort of turning your weaknesses into strengths.
Yeah,
it's my initial reading of it just from what you're telling me.
Yeah, I definitely like one of the long list of things of something I wish I had read more about, but I'm also uncertain of where to find more reading materials either.
It would be very cool if people could recommend those. I know that we've got that kind of nerd in our listenership. You know, when you're dropping your review on iTunes, which would also be really nice, please recommend things or hit up on Twitter and recommend the things.
Yeah.
We know you want to. Come on. Where are my well actuallys?
Don't,
Come
ne
on,
no,
this is the
never,
only,
never ask for
the
that.
only time I will ever ask for that. Come on. I'm turning your weaknesses into our strengths.
Okay.
Yeah.
But back in the more literal version of the plot, Monkey makes the six men an offer. Bring out all the treasures you've stolen, and I'll divide them into seven portions. We'll each take our lot and go our separate ways. But they're not afraid of one tiny monk, so they rush forward and start hacking at him with spears and swords. And Monkey literally just stands there as if nothing is happening while they cut at him.
Power move.
Yeah, so after a minute of this doing absolutely nothing to him, he finally says, "Your hands must be getting tired from all that exercise. It's about time for old Monkey to take out his needle for a little entertainment."
That is so sinister and so scary. It's very upsetting.
The robbers don't quite get what's being said. One of them says, "Is this monk an acupuncturist in disguise? We're not sick. What are you talking about needles for?" So I think you can guess what happens next. They all die.
Oh dear.
Monkey loots the six corpses, including all their clothes, and takes everything back to Tripitaka.
Oh, does he fall off his horse again?
I think he's. I don't think he's on the horse at the moment, but
Okay. But we know he would if he was.
probably. So Monkey says, "You may proceed now, Master. Those robbers have been exterminated." And Tripitaka replies, "That's a terrible thing you've done. They've."
Yeah, I love. Okay, Tripitaka has now taken on the mantle of only sane man in this entire
Oh,
story, and I'm here for it.
this goes on. They may have been strong men on the highway, but they would not have been sentenced to death even if they'd been caught and tried. If you're that powerful, you should have just chased them away. Why did you kill them all? How could you be a monk when you take life without cause? We're meant to avoid hurting ants when we sweep the floor and put shades on lamps to protect moths. How could you kill them just like that without regard for black or white? You showed no mercy at all. It's a good thing we're here in the mountains, where any further investigation's not gonna happen. But suppose someone offends you when we reach a city and you just hit people indiscriminately with that rod of yours. Would I be able to remain innocent and get away scot-free?"
He makes some very good points.
"Master, if I hadn't killed them, they would have killed you. As a priest, I'd rather die than practice violence. If I were killed, there would only be one of me, but you just slaughtered six people. How could you justify that? If this matter were brought before a judge, even if it was your old man, you wouldn't be able to get away with
Again, very good points from Tripitaka.
To tell you the truth, Master, when I was king on the Flowerfruit Mountain, I killed I don't know how many people. I would not have become the great sage equal to heaven if I had lived the way you're saying. It's precisely because you had neither scruples nor self-control that you were locked up for 500 years. If you still insist on practicing violence and indulging killing, then you're not worthy to be a monk, nor can you go to the Western Heaven. You're wicked. Well, if that's what you think, if you think I'm not worthy to be a monk, or I can't go to the Western Heaven, you needn't bother me any further with your nagging. I'll leave and go back." And he is gone. Tripitaka doesn't even see him go. He turns his head to look, and there's just no one there, and a swishing sound fading towards the east.
Squishing.
Swishing.
Okay, that's better.
Yeah, that didn't go well.
It's probably the first time that Sun Wukong has ever been called out by anyone. I'm not gonna lie, I'm kind of here for it.
It's great.
I'm loving it. It's like, yes.
So at this point, Tripitaka doesn't have anything to do but press on alone.
Yeah, there's that though, isn't there? Poor Bab.
After a little while, he passes an old woman on the road. They chat, and he tells her about his journey. She says that the journey to the Thunderclap Temple is 108,000 miles long, so how could he possibly get there alone? He explains about his disciple and all that happened, and the woman gives him a silk shirt and a flower cap inlaid with gold, which she says belonged to her son. He was a monk, but he died 3 days after he was ordained. And she says that she can give these to his disciple. She lives to the east, and she'll try to catch up with him and persuade him to come back.
Just get someone's mama to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Then
I get that.
she also teaches Tripitaka a spell called the True Words for Controlling the Mind, or the Tight Fillet spell, which he can use it when his disciple gets disobedient. Surprise, it's Guanyin! It's Guanyin! She reveals. Yeah, you had sympathy there for a second. She's
I'm
just like.
so he's cool with mind control then.
It's a little less direct than that, but she reveals her true form and flies off to catch up with Wukong.
She is the parole officer from hell.
So Wukong, in the meantime, has decided to stop off at Aoguang's palace on his way home. That poor, poor dragon.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. Tripitaka is not the Hans Christian Andersen of House Guests in this universe. We all know who that title goes to.
So it doesn't go badly, actually. They make some small talk for a while, and it quickly devolves into monkey bitching about Tripitaka. At some point, Wukong notices a painting on the wall and asks about it, and Aoguang explains it shows the story of Zhang Liang and Huang Shigong, which happened during the Western Han Dynasty, which is a little bit before Monkey was imprisoned, so it's not unreasonable that he never heard of it before. So he tells the story. Zhang was crossing the Yi Bridge when an old man took off his own shoe and threw it off the bridge and shouted at Zhang, "Go down and bring me my shoe." And Zhang did as he was asked, without getting cross, and he brought it back, at which point the old man lifted his foot and told Zhang to put the shoe on for him, and he did. And then the old man took his shoe off again and threw it in the river again, and told him to get it, and they did the same thing 3 times. And Zhang went along with this, all without complaining, with absurd patience. And afterwards, for his patience, the man gave him a book on the art of war. Not the Sun Tzu one, a different one.
Okay, well, at least he was rewarded, because I was about to say at least Sisyphus got some conditioning from, you know what I mean?
He used this book and the knowledge from it to defeat the Han Dynasty's enemies. And afterwards, Zhang became a disciple of the Taoist master Red Pine and become immortal. Anyway, this is actually like a folk tale outside of the novel as well. But the moral is, you need to be patient, go back to Tripitaka, and also get out of my house.
Yeah. Please tell me, he says, and also please leave.
Oh no, he doesn't. He doesn't.
No.
I have to be
I
honest. That's
it,
me.
it's subtext, I guess. But I imagine it's heavily implied.
So Monkey is actually convinced, and he decides to head back. And on his way, he does run into Guanyin, and he reassures her that he's already on his way back to Tripitaka, and she just says, "Okay, just go quickly before you change your mind again." And they leave it at that.
That doesn't sound like Guanyin.
So he finds Tripitaka sitting by the side of the road waiting for him. Tripitaka lightly scolds him, and tells him to go get some food from the bag. And in the luggage, on top of everything else, is the new hat and shirt that Guanyin gave him. And Monkey asks about them, and Tripitaka just nonchalantly says, "Oh, I wore those in my childhood. If you wear the hat, you'll know how to recite scriptures without having to learn them. And if you put on the garment, you'll know how to perform rituals without having to practice them." So,
Sun Wukong cannot resist a shortcut.
yo, exactly. So Monkey asked to wear them, and Tripitaka says, "Oh yeah, sure, as long as they fit, and they fit perfectly. It's almost as if they were made for Wukong. It's almost like it's a trap." So yeah, this is where you could lose sympathy for Tripitaka again. So he tries out the tight fillet spell, and Wukong starts screaming in pain. He doubles over and starts rolling around on the ground. So he grabs the headband and he tries to tear it off. Tripitaka is worried he might break it and stops reciting the spell. After the pain stops, Wukong keeps pulling at it, but it can't be moved. He tries to get the shrunk down Rob and jam it in beside it and try to pry it off, but Tripitaka starts reciting the spell again. So Tripitaka asks Monkey if he'll do as he's told from now on, and he promises he will. And asks him, will he ever be unruly again? And Monkey says, I dare not. And promises to behave. But
Oof.
then immediately he actually pulls out the rod and tries to kill Tripitaka.
Okay.
Which, fucking no, reasonable.
Under these circumstances, yeah.
But Tripitaka is able to start reciting the spell again before Monkey can bring it down on him. Monkey finally throws the iron rod down and shouts, Master, I've learned my lesson. Stop, stop, please stop. And Tripitaka says, How dare you be so reckless that you should want to strike me? I won't dare strike you, but let me ask you something. Who taught you this magic? Oh, it was an old woman who imparted it to me a few moments ago. Say no more. That has to be Guan Xiyin. Why does she want me to suffer like this? I'm going to go to the South Sea and beat her up.
Okay, you can't complain to the manager about your parole officer.
Tripitaka points out that she's the one who taught him the spell in the first place. She obviously knows it too. Monkey sees his point, decides to take a different tack. Master, this is her method of controlling me, allowing me no alternative but to follow you to the west. I'll not go bother her, but you mustn't regard this spell as a plaything either. I'm willing you to accompany you without ever entertaining thoughts of leaving ever again. If that's so, help me onto the horse and let's get going. And so with that truce, they head out on the road again, where I'm sure they will never have any more strife or arguments.
Of course, everything is smooth sailing.
And we'll see that in chapter 15.
Yay!
So yeah, that a lot happened there.
I'm liking their dynamic. Don't get me wrong, it's problematic as hell in many, many ways, but I'm liking the dynamic.
Yeah, it's genuinely a good book. Like a really like good character dynamics. I am so happy to finally get to the chapter where I could just like start reading the dialogue. I'm having a
Yay!
lot of fun with that. I hope it's I hope I
It's definitely coming across. It's good look on you. I like it.
it Yeah, we finally have some like proper character interactions.
Woo.
So yeah, I don't have any footnotes. I decided to put the context of stuff more within the as I was going this time. Anil, are you looking forward to anything? Do you have any expectations for what's coming?
I am looking forward to them sniping at each other and, somehow breaking apart again. Maybe he leaves this, maybe Tripitaka leaves this time and then pining for each other, like awkward exes, and then them getting back together. Is
Interesting.
that what happens?
That's not exactly how I'd characterize the dynamic.
Okay. I just they're gonna be friends.
Yeah, I mean there will be I think some degree of character development. But it does, you know, it does in a bit kind of settle into a more episodic structure.
Sweet.
So we are still somewhat in the kind of stage setting phase even at this point.
Okay. I don't know, I'm loving it.
Cool.
Very delighted that you asked me to do this.
I'm really enjoying finally getting to do this and finally getting to there's parts I loved up until now. Like I said, I adore the bit with the as you put it, Sun Wukharan in hell. But this is finally getting to the actual main characters getting to play off each other.
Cool.
Monkey is back.
Back in business. Tripping back on Monkey on the road to India.
It's great, great song. Thanks. It's
It's a work in
that's
progress.
our new theme song.
Okay. It's a work in progress. We'll get there.
Okay, cool.
I'm just thinking aloud.
And bye. Happy journeys. Happy monkeys. Happy goodbye.
Happy everything. I. That was a fun episode.